welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Okay, hello, welcome to episode 270 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb. And Sean Orford. I'm just going to lower the volume a little bit so I'm not too overpowering.
You just did a double take then on 270.
Yeah, how are you doing? You okay?
I'm good. Cool. I am happy man because my news this week is I have been pain-free for 4 days.
Painkiller-free?
Yeah, painkiller-free. And I've worked out more where it is, and I can do things to crack my back to make it better.
This is for your leg, for you.
Yeah.
Getting over onto your bike.
Yeah, so the good news is by next week I would definitely be back in the saddle.
Good to hear it. Yeah, I got here in the office this morning, there was a black Mercedes. A-class, is it? A-class?
Yeah, no, B-class.
B-class, excuse me. Parked outside. Oh, dear me, not again.
Not again, not on a car. No.
We're talking about nudge theory, kind of behavioural science this week.
Yeah.
In fact, I always do get it in there, but yeah, I've been nudging you onto a bike for years and it worked.
Yeah, yeah,
finally.
Good. Yeah.
Before we do, any new listeners out there, liveinthepresent.co.uk is our website. Check it out for all the show notes and links. Sean has written a blog post to accompany this. And all previous episodes will be online as well, will they not?
They will indeed.
If you sign up to our mailing list, you get some free meditation files, discount code for the Live in the Present book, and some other bits and bobs as well. And of course, weekly alerts for this show. What are you looking at video cameras for, Sean?
Because we're going to go on to doing live podcasts.
We are.
Video podcasts.
A bit of live streaming, perhaps.
Yeah.
And recording courses, yeah. That kind of thing.
I'm going to need your advice on what it is we're looking at here.
Yeah, the Mevo. Yeah, the Mevo live streaming camera. It's quite cool, I think. Main drawback is the built-in microphone ain't great.
Can we add mics onto that?
You can.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll figure that out. We'll figure it out, guys, don't you worry.
That's cool.
What you been up to?
What I've been up to?
Free.
I've just been living my life and being happy. Mm-hmm. Loads and loads of stuff going on. I've never been so busy in my life. It's been crazy.
You're trying to wind down, man. You're heading into your twilight
and
years.
I'm winding up. There is no twilight where I come from.
I want to give a shout out to my dad, who I mentioned last week.
He
was about to embark on a... He might actually have just set off that day, last week when we recorded. No, the day. Anyway, cycling from London to Paris. Not bad for a 67-year-old.
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah. And he did it, yeah, no problem at all. Well within his kind of comfort range in terms of distance. The heat was the only issue, really. We're having quite a warm summer in Europe. So that was a bit of a thing to deal with, but it was a really well-organised trip. I can't remember the name of the firm he went with, but it was, you know, guided, and there was a van kind of ahead of them and signposts and stopping every 10 miles to top up the water bottles and all that. So yeah, amazing. Yeah, it's good photos he put on, and I'll stick the Just Giving link. He's raised so far £850 for Alzheimer's UK, Alzheimer's Research UK.
Yeah,
not too shabby.
Brilliant.
So
I need to throw some money in the hat for that as well.
Yeah, no pressure.
So,
yeah, no pressure. We'd call if you get up to 1,000, actually. Nice round number.
Yeah.
Well,
have you had any more thoughts about my idea that we have our head shaved for?
Actually, I did. I spoke to the powers that be that evening, and she said she'd divorce me if I shaved my head.
And she said she'd do it instead.
That's how committed she is to cancer research.
She said she'd do it instead.
Yeah, she took it on the chin. She's doing it. So it's not looking good for me. What about you?
Yeah, I'm fine.
You're game?
Yeah, I'm game for that.
All right, okay. It's not looking good for me, I'll be honest, so don't bring it up again. It's embarrassing.
Okay, I'll talk to you next week.
Moving swiftly on. I've kind of been thinking about this one for a while, actually, and how we could crowbar it into a show. But it turns out there's a whole ream of academic research into nudge theory and how we can kind of, rather than hitting people with a sledgehammer when you want them to change their ways, little nudges here and there can have dramatic impact and results. When you start with this one, because I take it with the work you do with people, when you're working with them, working through issues and problems, you have to be quite subtle in the way you get them to, to change.
A nudge is a way of encouraging someone to do something or be somewhere without overtly doing it to them. So it could be as simple as if someone in your family or in your office makes you a cup of tea, and without going over the top and being too kind of smoochy about it, you thank them appropriately, you'll make them feel good enough to want to go and do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just nudge them into being the tea maker because it makes them feel good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you make the best cup of tea, that kind of thing. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, wow. Well, how do you do it? It's amazing. Yeah.
Do you stir it anti-clockwise?
but that's all kind of below awareness. And that's the point about nudging, because it happens below awareness. So the way that we got into talking about doing this was about me wearing a high-vis jacket when I was cycling, wasn't it?
Yes.
And then you came up with...
Well, some statistics which show that scientific results have shown that they don't actually have any impact in terms of safety on the road. So I read a lot about kind of the helmet debate for cycling, whether it should be compulsory for cyclists to wear helmets. And on the face of it, you think, yeah, of course, you know, you should, because you will. People are going to be safer if they fall off and they whack the head. The head's going to be better protected, which that's undeniable. But in there's only a couple of countries where it was made compulsory. I think Australia and Croatia. Australia was early mid 90s, perhaps, and cycling levels fell off a cliff. The thinking being that when you tell people that they have to wear a helmet when cycling, you advertise the fact that it is a dangerous thing to do, which it's not. You're far more likely to get a head injury in a car when you're driving, or even as a pedestrian. More pedestrians have head injuries from falling, tripping on curb stones, and no one's calling for helmet use for them. So
I think we should all wear helmets.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a bed helmet.
So thinking being, it's that kind of reverse psychology aspect thing. So if you nudge people to wear helmets and high vis, what you're secretly advertising is that cycling is a really dangerous pursuit. When it's not, or it's compared to other things, other ways of getting around, it's much, much safer.
Yeah. The science of nudging was developed to introduce ideas of changing people in a positive way.
Yeah.
But nudging can just as easily be done in a negative way, can't it? I mean, my dear old dad that we don't talk about these days, he would come in and he'd have the face. And the face was the nudge, because you saw the face, know the mood. See the face, know the mood, get out of it. Yeah. And so, like, just a look can be a nudge.
Yeah.
Tone of a voice can be a nudge.
Don't talk to me. Yeah.
Yeah. The way someone says hello can be a declaration of war.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the all those issues about should we or shouldn't we. And I mean, statistically, if you fall off a bike and you've got a helmet on, you're less likely to damage your head.
Yep.
Aren't you? Yeah.
Yes, you are. Well, my little boy, watching him learn to ride over the last couple of years, he's fallen off his bike loads, and not once has he hit his head, because he put his hands out to catch his fall.
Yeah, so you break your collarbone and stuff.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, my dad's fallen off his bike. He cycles hundreds of miles a week, and he has had a couple of falls, and both times, he broke his collarbone.
Yeah, that's the classic. You put your arm out.
And I mean, the helmets are designed to take an impact up to kind of 12 miles an hour. So if you get hit by a car at 30, 40 miles an hour, a little bit of polystyrene doesn't make much difference. Anyway, I wear a helmet on my ride to work, by the way, for the record, but not if I'm nipping to the shops or not if I'm on a nice little ride on a...
Well, I'm wearing a helmet and a high-vis jacket.
Yeah. So are you secretly advertising the fact to the population that cycling is a really dangerous pursuit and you're kind of...
Well, I thought that what I was advertising was, I'm here, bugger off and give me the space, was what I thought was advertising.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that's interesting about when you nudge people... People will accept a nudge, but they become blinder after a while. So if you keep telling someone that they make wonderful tea, in the end they won't hear that.
Right.
Yeah. So you have to change the message. So do we have to change from yellow hivers to orange hivers or green hivers, kind of thing? But you're saying, because one thing you said before we went on air, is that if you've got a high-vis jacket and a helmet, people are likely to drive closer to you. and give you less space.
That's right, yeah. And on the reverse, so yes, drivers will pass closer, but at the same time, someone wearing a helmet, cyclists wearing a helmet, have been shown to take more risks in terms of overtaking, you know, between narrow gaps or going around buses or up the inside of a bus. So people wearing helmets and more safety equipment when cycling take more risks themselves, as well as people around them taking more risks.
I think that the perfect answer to this is that if we were naked on a bike, if we were just all naked on bikes, not only would we not have any protection so that we would look after ourselves, but also people would stare at us and make sure that they did take into account that we were there.
Yeah.
Especially if we were young and sexy. What do you think?
I'm up for it. There is a naked bike ride in London every
day. Yeah, I know, yeah.
So we could do it.
Yeah. Our nieces were on a tourist bus, you know, with no top on it, going around London, and suddenly all these cyclists came down the road and they took all these pictures. They were like, oh my God, all these naked people. But they certainly looked, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, what this all says there, how remarkably easy humans are to control, or I'll use the word manipulate.
Yep.
We're dead easy to manipulate, aren't we?
But that's what advertising's about.
Yeah.
Doesn't it? So if someone's going to sell you a product and you're a loving mother, do they nudge you on the basis of, would you be so evil to your children that you wouldn't buy them this wonderful thing to make you feel guilty? And the nudge is the guilt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. I've watched a fair bit of Derren Brown in my time. He's obviously a master nudger, manipulator. Yeah. He can, you know, the stuff he does with his audiences, I mean, he can kind of nudge people to do almost anything. In fact, including commit murder. I think one of his shows, he's kind of got people to the point where they will actually kill someone, like, based on his command. And, you know, he's kind of said, oh, at the last minute, easy now, Tiger. What in the dark arts that you perform when you're speaking with people, I take it what you're ultimately wanting people to do is take control of the situation themselves and make their own decisions. Are you manipulating people to...
But if you're trying to nudge somebody, it could be that you might say to somebody, if someone came up to you and said this, this and this, how would you feel? So you're nudging them into paying attention to their own feelings, then relating those feelings to how other people might feel.
Yeah.
So that would be a nudge, wouldn't it? You might say that if you proceed with that course of action, what outcomes could you expect? Or you might even say to them, you know, the likely outcomes could be this, this or this. Which one do you think is the most likely?
Yeah.
So you are nudging people into hopefully making positive decisions about things. Obviously, there's lots of situations where... there is no positive decision. It's just a case of people have to deal with the consequences of action. So as long as they're prepared to deal with the consequences of their action, then that's okay, isn't it?
Yeah.
So if you fall off your bike and you haven't got a helmet on, you bash your head and you crack your skull, then that's the consequence of action.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of like major public health campaigns in recent years. Obviously now smoking is much less of an issue than it was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So like 20 years ago or 30 years ago when it was realised, or even beyond that, that smoking is not a great thing to do, probably like for yourself and for the people around you. What initial nudges were put in place? I mean, we've obviously got to the point now where it's not really nudging anymore. The pictures on the front of cigarette packs, that's not a nudge, that's like a baseball bat around the head, isn't it?
Don't know. It depends on how people see it, because when you look at something, do you relate it to being the thing that you're looking at? It's a bit like if you look at a slice of steak, do you relate to the cow that it came from, or is it just a piece of meat? You know, what are you seeing when you see it? It's like the whole issue about vegetarianism. It's like if people go and watch the video Earthlings, then most people have a revulsion for what's happening to animals.
Yeah.
From just watching the movie. No one's saying to them, you need to be a vegetarian. They're just looking at what happens to animals.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's those kinds of things that nudge us. Lots of governments do attempt to nudge people by putting signs up, by having slogans. There's a whole thing going on at the moment which is run by the financial authorities where they're trying to nudge people into making sure that they've claimed their PPI, because it's going to run out next year. You won't be able to do it after next year.
Yeah.
So there's a big campaign to kind of sweep up anybody that hasn't done it to get them to do it.
Yeah.
And that's a nudge. It's not saying you must do this.
Do you work with local authorities or like the health service on like how they can health campaigns can be rolled out?
Yeah. Well, there's loads and loads of health prevention going on there, which is anything from bullying right through to mindfulness and people looking after themselves in individual ways. One of the things that I like about my watch has just done it, you see, it just said...
nudge.
It said you've got another 75 steps to do this hour, right? Because if I don't do 250 steps an hour, it nudges me and says, you've done it.
Yeah, my watch used to nudge me to stand up every hour if I hadn't, you know, I was working. I turned it off, actually, because I was getting a bit like... forget it, man. I can figure it out myself. But for a lot of people, no, it's cool. And the 10,000 steps a day,
yeah,
really successful kind of nudging in action, isn't it? Where technology can play a part,
yeah,
to kind of get people moving.
Yeah, Robert's off in Prague at the moment, and he sent a WhatsApp thing through last night with a picture of his Fitbit page on his phone.
Oh yeah, been walking around,
and it said, you know, he'd done nearly 29,000 steps.
My record for a day is 30,000.
Right.
And I was on 29,000 and a bit. And I was, you know, ready to go to bed. So I had to walk around the living room.
You were determined.
A few times and it ticked over. 30,000! Walking around London one day.
Yeah,
but they work, don't they? Little things like that.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I guess there is a lot of science behind this. And there's loads of blog posts and articles and books which we're going to link to shortly, which show is it a kind of a recent-ish phenomenon that something that
no I think everybody's done it forever.
Yeah, well, I've been watching Mad Men actually on Netflix, which is about the advertising industry in the 50s and 60s. So that's, I guess that's when things started to take off in terms of sales and the economics of nudging.
But the whole diplomacy and politics is the same thing, isn't it? You can imply to another country that if you don't do what we want you to do, we're going to invade you and take all your land away, which might nudge you into doing certain things. So I think it's always been there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, the political field is a bit chaotic at the moment. But yeah, nudging aplenty there. If you look at the campaigns for the Brexit and Trump, Hillary Clinton as well, she was doing her best to nudge.
Yeah.
Well, she got more votes than him, so she did successfully nudge to a point, didn't she? But she didn't nudge in the right places, those key swing states.
And maybe there are other people nudging behind her that were doing other things.
Mm.
You know. But if you look in nature, the fact that we know that if something is coloured yellow and black, it's usually poisonous.
Yeah.
So that nature nudges, it's saying, like, don't get involved with me because I'm dangerous.
Or thorny bush, it's like, whoa, stay back, guys.
Yeah, so the nudge is not to get involved.
Mm.
Yeah, so that it can be, to be those colours is a protection.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe it isn't just us and me and my yellow vis jacket. It's more to do with, it's a natural process that goes on in nature where we're below awareness saying things to people.
Yeah.
And it's only when you use mindfulness that you start to bring what is below awareness into awareness.
Mm.
And then you can use it below awareness to influence other people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, and I'm not embarrassed about going on about Brexit because I don't think we should do it, but it's like that big red bus that had, you know, we will put £350 million a week back into the NHS written on the side of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was a nudge, which wasn't true. And that's the point about nudging, is when propaganda is used, it is nudging, which may or may not be true.
Yeah, or Farage in front of his poster of all the refugees coming, invading Europe, which wasn't even a European issue, really, because it was the people from outside the EU. Anyway, but, I mean, there's lots to learn from things like that in terms of... Because the Remain campaign was based a little bit, you know, it was called Project Fear, or it was labelled at least by the other guys as Project Fear. And it was really, you know, it wasn't a positive advert for life as a European, integrated European country, was it? Which we're starting to see now, thankfully. We've kind of, the upside of Brexit has been that we've built in the UK the biggest grassroots pro-European community in all of Europe, because a lot of people have realised in hindsight what we're about to lose, or what we could lose potentially.
Yep.
So we'll be back in 20, 30 years maybe. Hopefully.
Well, if it does go for the leave, I should be getting my Irish passport.
Yeah.
Courtesy of my grandparents, so I shall remain in Europe.
Yeah, but nudging, man, in politics is big, isn't it? Especially with the new digital world, where, I mean, that's all coming to the fore now in terms of looking at how data was used and misused during the campaign, Brexit and Trump. It's fascinating, really, this new world, but a little bit dangerous as well. Very dangerous.
But that whole idea about, do you believe what you read on Twitter or on Facebook? Because it's so easy to nudge for something to go viral, and it's absolute nonsense.
Yeah.
But we just nudged thousands, maybe millions of people.
Yes, yeah. I can think of a specific few cases of that in the run-up to the referendum, stuff that was getting shared by my friends and family. And, you know, a quick little Google showed that it was absolute codswallop.
Mm.
Very frustrating. But yeah, we're learning stuff. There's a blog post on The Guardian I'm going to link to about behavioural economics. About, it mentions in the first couple of paragraphs about a study that was done at a school, or a trial, which was trying to introduce kids to healthier options on the school menu rather than sausage and chips and gravy, which was my favourite when I was back at school, man. £1.50 or whatever. And they made a simple little change in terms of where they positioned the healthy food. So they put the healthy options at eye level for the kids. And just that one little change saw a big swing for kids picking the healthy options.
But if you look at the psychology in a supermarket, the things that are on the ends of the aisles sell more than the ones that are on the shelves.
Yeah.
So they target those. If you become aware of the lighting above the vegetables is a green hue, and the lighting above the meat is a red hue.
Yeah.
It's changing, yeah. And also, if you listen to the music has different beats. So if there aren't many people around, they slowed the music down so that there's more people wandering around. It looks fuller, so people buy more. If it's very busy and they want to get people through the tills, they up the beat of the music. So subliminally, below awareness, people just move faster.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I'm getting back into my gaming at the moment, playing a lot of Zelda and Mario, and, you know, within games, game design is a really fascinating thing, because when you approach a certain area of a game, if there's something to find within the game, you will be nudged to kind of look in that, you know, round behind that tree, or a little bit over the hill, or there'll be something slightly different about the landscape which will just nudge you to kind of look a bit closer, and then, hey, look, there's a treasure chest hidden under there or whatever. So yeah, it's fascinating, really, isn't it? But what point does nudging become like manipulation, or are they just two sides of the same coin?
I think it's like we talk about communication. Where does communication end and manipulation begin? And anything that's happening below someone's awareness, I guess, is in some way manipulative.
Yeah.
Hopefully, it's manipulative positively, but it could be negatively. You know, if you scare someone, you can take their money off them to give them some kind of protection or sell them some kind of service because they're scared.
Yeah.
Because you manipulate them into being scared.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's that kind of top-down versus bottom-up approach, isn't it, as well? I mean, the work I'm doing in terms of trying to cleaner air, people on bikes, road safety stuff, one of my big goals is to stop cars being allowed in a certain set of roads near the school where I drop Will off, because it's just chaos every morning. The air quality is horrendous. I can tell people are stressed getting kids in and out of cars, you know, strapping them in and out. So I'm trying to, basically, I want to ban non-residents from that road. But I know that if I just go to the parents and in the cars and say, you can't come down here anymore, or the council was to do that, it would have not a great impact. But it needs to be the parents making the decision not to go there anymore. So I'm thinking of ways about how I can do that in terms of working with residents, working with the school, getting public health from the council involved.
Yeah.
So I don't become like the most hated parent on the playground. I'm actually seen as someone who kick-started this revolution. Hopefully, you know, locally in other schools.
So are you currently seen as the parents on the playground?
No, I don't think so. Anyway, I'm not sure. No, I think I'm probably seen as the irresponsible dad who cycles down with his son down the middle of the road, dodging Range Rovers. I'm not yet seen as that guy who's trying to stop me parking my car here every morning. I'm close to tapping on a couple of windows for parents that kind of leave their engines running while they're waiting for school to open up, you know, for 10 minutes just chugging away.
Yeah.
Because that's a real problem.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm just thinking about nudging the whole time.
But the whole world is a nudge. If you walk down the road and you look at the different advertising hoardings, you look at the traffic signs, everything is trying to nudge you into doing things, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm fascinated by urban design and planning, and now there's loads of stuff was done in New York to get road safety better, and even little things like making the lanes for cars narrower by, you know, 50 centimetres.
Mm-hmm.
It just drivers went slower because they kind of had to be a bit more careful to keep within those white lines.
Right.
Little nudges like that can improve road safety.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
We are really obedient creatures. Most of us, aren't we? We like to follow the rules.
Yeah, we'll be compliant as long as it's not stuffed in our face.
Yeah.
If you say to someone, you must not smoke any cigarettes, they smoke twice as many.
Yeah.
Whereas if you write on the side of a package, you know, that smoking could kill you. You know, people absorb that below their awareness.
Yeah.
You know, has more of an effect.
What's your resource, Sean?
My resource is the Nudge book, which is... It's where it all came from. It's improving decisions in health and happiness.
Yeah, it's the guy that won the Nobel Prize. I think I was mentioning in one of the articles I've been reading about. I can't remember his name. Okay.
Yeah, that's good.
Cool. And mine is a chap called David Halpern on Nudge Theory. A short little video he did at the RSA. Again, similar kind of stuff, but talking about public health and how you can get big changes in public attitude from tiny little tweaks to. Routines, fascinating stuff actually.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, livingthepresent.co.uk. All the show notes and links from previous episodes are on there. And if there's anything you would like us to talk about in an upcoming show, do send us a message on Facebook or Twitter, or via our website as well. Contact form there. We'll get it in there, won't we?
Yeah, we will do. Indeed.
Right, Sean, you have a good week.
And you.
See you later.
Take care.
Bye.